This is the November 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Oh, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Dave Chatterton joins us from Strategic Farm Marketing. That's in Champaign, Illinois. And Ellen Dearden is here from Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois. We're also joined today by Philip Shaw from Under the Agridome, DTN, philipshaw.ca. That stands for Canada. He's in Dresden, Ontario, Canada. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. And I want to take time to remind you that you need to pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up on the 15th day of December. Buy those tickets right now online at willag.org, or you can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, the home of the Farm Doc team. You'll find the Farm Assets Conference there. That's on the 15th of December in Champaign. And the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, those are in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb in January on the 9th, 10th, and the 11th. All the registrations are open. Take time right now to get yourself registered for one of the Farm Doc conferences this early winter meeting season. Now, let's begin with Philip Shaw today. We haven't talked with you, Philip, for a while. Under the Agridome is a column that you write for DTN, but you're also a farmer there in Dresden, Ontario, Canada. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and maybe what this past season was like for farms in your part of the world?
Thanks, Todd. I farm near Dresden, Ontario, and give you a little bit of an inkling where that is. It's about 70 miles northeast of Detroit, Michigan, so it's not too far from the American border. I farm about 850 acres of corn, wheat, and soybeans, and I also write agricultural commentary for DTN across the United States and Canada. I also write commodity commentary for the Ontario Grain Farmers of Ontario here in Canada. So that's what I do with regard to farming, with regard to commodities. This past year, where I am, we had lots of smoky weather like you did across the Midwest, but that caused us to have tremendous corn yields in this part of the province. We had record yields here, and we had a lot of rain this year, but we had above average soybean yields as well. So Ontario is a big place. It goes from about Detroit, Michigan, all the way to the Quebec border at Montreal. So there's a lot of geographic area in between. There's a lots of diversity in the agriculture as well as the marketing.
I normally will get a list of items from everybody to talk about for the day. I know this is short notice for you, but just a couple of quick things that you want to discuss, and then we'll come back to them later in the program. What's kind of on your mind?
Well, I would like to know how everybody feels about the big picture of things going into 2024. It seems like things are pretty bearish now, and you know, why wouldn't they be with the big crops that we've had both in Eastern Canada as well as in the greater American Corn Belt? I would just like to know what the other analysts feel about the big picture of things as we move forward, because, you know, we're talking about much lower prices than a year ago.
Well, let's start with that, and then we'll pick up with a list from each of you. Ellen Dearden, what is your big picture thought at Ag Review as it relates to 2024?
Well, I think we're not done with inflation yet, despite some economic data that came out of the Commerce Department today that showed just a little blip up in consumer spending, not as much as what I think the trade was looking for. But I still think we've got a lot of underlying inflation in this market. And even if we've got fertilizer prices down for this upcoming crop year, which suggests to me that farmers are going to add more P&K as well as nitrogen to their ground, we could end up with big crops this year again, in spite that I expect to see lower corn plantings and higher bean plantings this year.
Dave Chatterton, how about your big picture for 2024?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I think to pick up on what Ellen said, certainly, you know, producers and the questions that we're getting are very concerned with what the break-even prices and profitability are going to look like going into the 2024 crop year. There's questions about government and ad hoc payments and what those might look like in the year ahead. And certainly those are all probably bigger questions, more so than we have answers for them. But I think farmers need to look at being proactive and being a little bit defensive here in terms of marketing when it looks at 2024. And of course, I guess the question of the moment is old crop corn. I mean, we constantly get that question through our office with producers holding what I'll call maybe an uncomfortable amount of old crop 23 production in corn that's unpriced. Values have been down. We've seen contract lows here this week before finally a little bit of a bounce today. And so the question is, you know, what should I be doing with that? And you know, there's a lot of different questions to that, or answers to that, depending on if it's on farm or off. But that's what's top of the mind for the producer here, I think, at the moment.
And Matt Bennett, your big picture?
You know, I agree with a lot of stuff that's already been said. I mean, you know, I guess I'll just kind of highlight a couple different things. I agree with Ellen that you're going to be looking at lower corn plantings and bigger bean plantings. I guess from my vantage point, it is cheaper to put a crop out for sure for 24 than what it was for 23. 23 is going to look pretty rough for a lot of folks, quite frankly, whenever it gets right down to it, buying inputs too high. And it's no secret that the farmer did not come into harvest with a lot of corn sold ahead of time, which is a pretty big issue considering how much we wrapped up in this crop. So, you know, I think that that's something we've got to put down in our, we need to chart that, you know, we need to journal that whenever we're paying, you know, excessively high prices, trying to get some corn booked. But, you know, you look at this year and I think it gives you a false sense of security that inputs are going to be awfully cheap for the 24 crop. You got to be concerned, I guess, though, that, you know, what if South America does have a decent crop and the U.S. plants 90 million or more acres of corn. You start plugging some of those numbers in and your world and U.S. stocks are going to be, you know, definitely growing. And so I still want to be very defensive, as Dave was saying, definitely looking closely at potentially booking, you know, some old crop stuff, corn and beans, even though corn doesn't look all that rosy, and just, you know, maybe just calling it a bad year, you know, overall, especially compared to 21 and 2. I mean, 21 and 2 were just so good that it's tough to kind of wrap your head around what 23 looks like. And then let's start focusing on 24, because I do think that 24 overall is probably going to offer better chances for profit margins than what 23 did.
Twice we've heard now that farmers, both from Matt and from Dave, that farmers are behind in the United States on their marketing and maybe had more corn left open and unpriced than they have in usual spaces, and are awfully worried about prices north of the border. And sometimes this is different and sometimes it's not. Are prices low and are producers worried, and did they not sell enough?
It's hard to tell how much they sold. I really don't know the answer to that question. I know in my own case, old crops in the rearview mirror, and you know, there was lots of opportunity to price grain at very profitable prices here. One of the big differences that I have with my American friends is I and all Canadian farmers, all Ontario farmers and Quebec farmers, have to think about the value of the Canadian dollar. For instance, cash price for corn in my neighborhood today is $5.50, and for soybeans, it's $16.80, but that's in Canadian currency, and that's what we think about. Those prices are significantly lower than they were a year ago, but especially for soybeans, they're at profitable levels. So I would echo much about what my American friends would say, but just like a lot of farmers in foreign lands like Brazil, Canada, Argentina, we always have to think about what our currency is doing, because if the Canadian dollar rose in value significantly, that takes a lot of our profitability away as well. And a year ago, the price of corn here was $8 a bushel, and now it's $5.50 a bushel, but the value of the Canadian dollar is relatively the same, and that won't stay that way all the time. And of course, our American friends, our price can't get too out of whack here, or we import corn from our American friends. So it's a U.S. replacement value that always determines the cash price for corn in Eastern Canada. So I don't know if that answers your question. Prices are lower than what we've been coming accustomed to. I was interested in the one comment about what government payments might be. Well, I know what they'll be here. There'll be nothing here. So there are differences across the border, and we're hoping for a good year. We had tremendous crops here, so that really helps out. it's much better than having a year where you don't have a good crop, but you have higher prices. So we're hoping for many things our American friends are hoping for. And like Matthew said, maybe 24 will be better than 23. That would certainly be welcome here.
Are you of a mind that will be the case? What's your big picture of 2024?
Well, if the Canadian dollar goes up significantly, no, it won't be the case. It'll be the opposite case. If it stays the same, you know, for instance, I had corn contracted here for 7.25 this year. I sold it last year for $8. It would be very difficult in my mind to get above what 23 was with regard to our production and our prices. However, I do think Matthew has a point. I think the scenario, depending on what plays out in Brazil, what plays out with weather in the United States, it certainly could pan out that way, especially with farm inputs being lower priced than 24 than maybe they were in 23.
Ellen Dearden, when you talk to producers about old crop sales and what to do with unpriced bushels, what are they hoping for, and what are you telling them they might be able to obtain?
Well, I think the magic number is $5 on farm, picked up on farm for corn. And I keep telling them it's probably not in the cards. But what I think is different in this carrying charge market than what we had seen over the last several years is that look at the December-July corn spread. I mean, when's the last time we saw that at 40 cents? You can sell corn for the deferred delivery and pick up enough to pay your storage and interest, particularly if it's stored at home. But I think we have to learn how to use carrying charge markets again, because we've all forgotten how to do that. We don't see the same thing on beans, not big carry in the beans, however.
Can you put me through a quick training? How do I use it? How do I take advantage of that carrying charge?
Well, you can't take advantage of it unless you sell the difference between July and December. So if we're selling July corn futures at 504, which is where they closed Thursday night, you're already money ahead. You've got to pay storage, you know, a couple of cents a month. You got to pay interest. And certainly both of those are going to eat into it about 3 cents a month on the interest cost. But you've got 40 cents. And that could take you out for a movement in the May-June time period. And again, how many farmers want to haul corn in May and June? Probably not that many. So I would prefer to sell the board and look to lock in the basis a little later.
Dave Chatterton, any ideas for what producers ought to do?
I think Ellen's got it nailed. I mean, the number farmers are looking for is $5 on corn and $14 on beans. When you kind of break that back and say, you know, to her point, what's the path that gets us to $5 corn? We're not really sitting on that today. That's going to involve a bigger problem in South America regarding, you know, getting their corn crop, let's say, below 115 or 112 million metric tons. And it's going to involve China coming into the U.S. market to buy corn. So our corn export situation right now, you know, when we look at it, we've had, I'll call it an overperformance from some of our traditional partners in South Korea, Mexico, Japan, but China has been buying almost exclusively from South America, and really to the tune of over 500 million bushels just in this marketing year alone. So in doing so, or I should say since May when they started it with China. So in doing so, we need some of that flow to come to the U.S. And perhaps we can start to do that. There's a little bit of light here at the end of the tunnel after the deep kind of first notice day and things that are going on today. It looks like we're finally getting off of that path just a little bit and maybe realizing that U.S. export corn is competitively priced globally, but it's going to take a much bigger lift than what we have. So part of it is your time frame. If you need to cash flow for, you know, for on-farm purposes at the end of the year or early in the year, I think you have to set your sights below those marks. If you, to Ellen's point, if you've got, you know, on-farm storage and you're sitting there and you can play that carry game just a little bit, you might be just a little bit more patient, but be very cognizant of that defense word that we talked about. And when you're staring a we'll call it 2.2 billion bushel U.S. carry out in the face, it's going to take some heavy lifting to really sustain that market above that $5 mark and do that. Beans, you know, I think it's the, you know, it's the vagarity of what happens with China and how much they actually end up taking here. Certainly, you know, we're still seeing a competitive situation out of South America. Their bean crop on paper is getting smaller for the new crop, but, you know, it's going to be a while before we harvest that. And even at that point, we've got a big rebound in Argentine production this year to offset what looked like some potential losses or backups from what the ideas were earlier in the year in Brazil. And so all in, you're still looking at probably what looks like a record soybean supply in South America. And again, you know, these U.S. balance sheets are pointing to a heavier or a higher situation and not one that's conducive to price. So outside of that black swan event, I think you have to be pretty cognizant, you know, you have to be pretty, you know, realistic in how you plan for that.
Matt, both Dave and Ellen have said, you know, $5 is not what you're going to get. You can make that sale, but you're really looking at something lower than that, I suppose, if you are on farm and you don't take your carrying charge part of it and your or your interest, one of the two, you're what, at, I don't know, 480, 485, and something below that if you're commercial storage. How do you view this for farmers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been looking at this as well. And, you know, most of your elevators are charging 3 to 4 cents commercially. So if it's in the elevator, you know, you're needing 6 to 7 cents a month. You know, you're asking for quite a bit here. If it's at home, you know, and I'm in a position there at home, it's in the bin. I'm like Ellen. I kind of like the idea of selling the carry in the market and then waiting on basis to come to us. Now, that's typically what we did in the grain business whenever we were in the grain elevator. That was about the only way we were able to ever make money, quite frankly, is to play that game. But it's not a bad game to play, especially as Ellen suggested, you're looking at carry, you know, that's at levels we haven't seen in quite some time. I mean, you've got, what, 42 and a half cents from Dece out to July. That's about as strong as I've seen. And so I don't know that I remember a time when we had had bigger carry there. It may have happened, but I sure don't remember it. So, you know, as a producer, I think that gives you an opportunity that, you know, they're probably going to want more corn more at some point. Right now, there's no question the producer's tight-fisted, had really, you know, I mean, you listen to us today and maybe some other shows, and it sure does sound like everything's down in the dumps and frustrating. But Todd, we all know that 21 and 22 were great years. And I mean, that's why the farmers so tight fisted, had really solid income in 21 and 2. And once again, I feel like there's a real good opportunity in 24 to at least lock in some better margins than what a lot of people experience for 23. The real problem you've got for 23 is that we, you know, we put out the most expensive corn crop for most producers that they've ever put out. You know, you look at some of the farm dog data they put out over the last year, $1,200 an acre was a good average, I believe, for most of the areas of Illinois that those guys put out. And so $1,200 an acre, obviously, that puts you behind the eight ball, you know, whenever, you know, USDA is calling for average market price to be $1.60 below it was a year ago. So this just makes it a really tight ball game. But with that being said, I do think you can make your bins pay. Again, sell the carry in the market, and let's turn around and give it some time, see if we can't get this basis to come back to us. And if we do that, I think we've got some opportunity there to at least be able to scratch and claw our way back to, you know, maybe some profit, or at least be able to hold things constant. Maybe you don't make any money on corn, and you make a little bit of money on soybeans, because that's kind of what we've been looking at here lately. Is a lot of growers can pencil profit on 23 for soybeans, but they're kind of struggling too as far as corn's concerned.
Philip Shaw, if there's anything you want to add to this part of the conversation, that's fine. If not, you could address for me the demand structure in the export market for North America, I suppose, or across the planet, if you've been thinking about it in that way.
I'd add two things that people can talk about a little bit later. Is one is with the soybeans, I'm getting, you know, my natural inclination as a farmer is to plant more soybeans next year, just because corn costs so much to grow and it's so risky. And I'm just wondering what price level the others feel is the potential for both November soybeans and old crop soybeans as well. I know it depends on what happens in Brazil and a lot of things like that. But with regard to the export structure out of North America, you know, obviously I'd like to see more of that. Sometimes we worry a little bit about Brazil producing so many soybeans that they start exporting them into the United States. We even had a situation where they imported them into Canada, believe it or not, a year or two ago. So I don't know. I would rely on my friends to answer some of those questions, and we'll see what they have to say.
I think on the new crop beans, we have the possibility to get back between 13 and a quarter and 13.50. And I think farmers really need to consider that as a good place to be underway. And when I talk about underway in this past year, guys will say, well, yeah, I made a 5% sale. And I think we need to make what I call big boy sales. You know, we need to be looking at amounts that are really meaningful, particularly since we've got the fertility up and it looks like we've got the moisture to get a crop really going. As far as new crop corn goes, 5.25 on December 24 corn could trip my trigger. We've already made a sale at that level. I was hoping we would get in that 540 to 550 range, but we haven't been able to get back to 5.25.
Dave Chatterton, where do you stand?
Yeah, Tom, I think back to that defensive point and having some profitable sales on the books for 24 as we enter that growing season. Certainly, there's a lot of runway ahead of the market. A lot of things can change. We need to finish out the South American crop. We have a whole U.S. growing cycle to go, and any number of geopolitical or outside events can affect our markets. But that's part of what concerns me. Those aren't all going to be bullish, and those aren't all going to offer us profit. If we look at that carryout and kind of where it's pointing, I think anything above $5 in these 24 corn, you need to get yourself started. If you take, you know, where it's at today, we'll just say it's 512, call that 490 cash times, you know, 235 on a yield, and you're talking a little over $1,100 an acre. And certainly with the, you know, to Matt's point, with the lower input costs that we're looking at for this year's crop, it may not be sexy. It may not be a 21, 22 type of a margin, but certainly it's durable enough to keep you farming and keep your bills paid. A little bit of a similar situation above 13 in beans. I think I'm a little bit more patient there just because of the balance sheet in the U.S. and the problems that we're having in Brazil. But having said that, I think you need to, anything above 13 incrementally be rewarding that market and get yourself a little bit ahead of the normal pace that you've had here over the last several years in terms of the amount of new crop 24 production that you have sold or have, you know, hedged going into to the new year.
Matt Bennett, you have targets for December and November new crop 2024 corn and soybeans?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, we've gotten a little bit of a start already, but if I'm sitting here, haven't sold anything yet, I'm like Dave, I think I get over $13 and I'm probably going to be incrementally rewarding this market. You know, and maybe even sell some if it doesn't. You know, let's say we come in tomorrow and the forecast changes. You know, I do think that there's a lot of folks that would be kicking themselves firmly in the rear end if you know, if 1294 beans go away from us. And what kind of downside do we have if Brazil ends up with a mid-160s type crop? You know, I would say that you've probably got a dollar downside there. Now, personally, I think we can be patient for the time being. It's still early enough that I think you'll get some bounces in here. And so maybe you do see a 13.25 to 13.50 like Ellen was talking, but I'm probably going to start just a little bit earlier, especially looking at these lower input costs. I want to look at my profit margins and my profitability per acre and be able to latch on to some of that. I'm going to do so in a flexible manner, you know, whether it's putting a floor in place and maybe letting some upside go, at least on a portion of bushels. But I think that that's where I'm at with beans. And then on corn, you know, you look at corn in this 512 level, you know, I'd like to see us get back up to that 525.25. I do think there's a potential that we'll see that happen. But my friendliness over maybe the short run might be trumped a little bit by my my hesitancy as far as the long term goes. I again think that you could be looking at stock growing a fair bit. And if that's the case, I think that 512 even could look awfully good next October. So, I want to be hesitant to sit on my hands too much and to wait and ask for too much out of this market, reward it incrementally whenever I know that I can lock in profit margins. And if I need to keep some flex in that plan, there's so many different tools out there that we can do so. So, I'm selling a little bit right in here with some folks, especially depending on what their setup is. I think that they can certainly pencil a heck of a lot more profit, especially as far as corn's concerned and what they experienced on this 23 crop to date anyway.
Philip, I know you're not discounting what weather might bring for South America, but you are being very cautious as it relates, it appears to me, to the marketplace. What Daryl Good would say, it's normal until it's not. I'm not sure what this last set on the rally might have been. Maybe it was that it wasn't going to be normal. The market's ahead of that sometimes. You have been. Are you cautious in the way you're marketing the 2024 crop?
Yes, I am. Per usual, though, isn't that the nature of farmers? Like, for instance, isn't the first week in December sometimes a good time to forward contract corn for the following year just on a seasonality basis? I know that seasonality for like corn usually hits a high in June and soybeans usually hit a high in July. But, over a career, what has changed is we think about those weather markets where and seasonality in corn and soybeans. But now with Brazil producing so much corn and being the leading producer of soybeans, we often have to think about their weather markets. And I know it's difficult. But yes, of course, I have to think about foreign exchange, which is Canadian dollar. And that's another layer that if I said to my American colleagues, well, I know you think about the value of the U.S. dollar, but if you thought about it in my way, it's just a totally another layer that you have to put on your crop marketing. And that's what I have to do. So, yes, I mean, I look at that and I look at all the seasonality, both in Brazil and the United States, and I try to make my decisions accordingly. And like I say, all my old crop is in the rearview mirror, and I'm looking toward new crop now. And when is the best time to price that crop? And it's always a challenge. I can say.
I know that. There are many things that we have not gotten to today, but we're 27 minutes into the program. Probably time to think about wrapping up. If you have issues that you want to discuss, go ahead and give those to me now, and as you wrap up, give me your thoughts on them. I'll start with you, Ellen Dearden, from AgriView in Morton, Illinois.
Well, we haven't talked about wheat, and we'd had kind of a spectacular week this week, and on Thursday, we got above all the key moving averages and really sparked a lot of short covering.
Why is it important for you that wheat had such a good week, Ellen?
Well, wheat has been the dog for how long here? And really is tied in with corn as well. So I think the fact that wheat looks like it may have a bottom in, however we've said that how many times, may be a good sign for corn as well. Corn has this big supply hanging over its head. Wheat really does not from a world standpoint at all. So the fundamentals on wheat have not looked as poor as the charts have. So that could give some spark to the corn market, I would think.
Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, Todd, I think one thing we've talked about today, a lot of talk about targets and a lot of talk about selling into what we'll call modest rallies here and being a little bit on the defensive in terms of your marketing approach. But one thing I would tell you is that, we still continue to see a lot of volatility in these markets. And usually when we see that volatility, it gets bigger, not smaller in these types of situations. So I would encourage you that if you're going to take that path and you're going to, recognize some of the targets that we talked about, get some offers in place, get them in with your elevator, get them in with your broker, whatever it might be. We see a lot of our offers anymore getting hit on the overnight session and for different reasons, but the market moves quickly. And when the opportunity is there, this is the type of a year where carryout is building, that when the opportunity is there, you need to be taking advantage of it sooner rather than later. It's not a, hey, I want to call you back and think about it type of a decision. So make your decision, be at peace with it, but get those offers working.
Matt Bennett, your final word for the day?
Basically going to echo a lot of what I already said, but I think, when it gets right down to it, I always try to go back to the basics as far as how I look at the basics. And, You know, what's the profit margins? You know, and if we're in a position where we know, you know, we can lock in what I would call some worst case scenarios that are better than what we're experiencing for 23, then I think we need to pay close attention to that. Yeah, I'm with Dave on that, that if we're going to, you know, say, hey, you know what, I'm going to think about that and I'll get back with you. A lot of times we know how that goes. And so I want to do my homework. I want to know what kind of money I can make at some of these price levels and then, you know, put myself in a position to where I'm not, you know, going to get strangled if I'm wrong, but I'm at least setting a floor in place to protect myself in case the bottom falls out from these markets. Because, you know, I do, like Ellen said, there's a big supply hanging over the head of this corn market. And typically when you're building stocks, you know, U.S. stocks going up 50%, and you got to be very cautious as to assume that you're going to get a lot of positive price action moving forward. So I'm a little more of a hesitant mode. I guess you could call me bearish a little bit if you want over the long haul, but regardless, my main focus is locking in profit.
Philip Shaw, your final word for the day.
I'm glad Ellen mentioned wheat because that's something we haven't talked about. And the wheat market, you know, is very maddening. But you think about it on a global basis, and one thing I always mention is Ukraine and Russia are continuing in their hot war. And because of that, that remains a wild card in the wheat market, even though prices have been very low. And of course, wheat prices are hard to know because they plant and harvest wheat in every month of the year somewhere in the world. And so getting some type of seasonality on wheat is very difficult to know. And so that'll continue to challenge as we go into next year. As far as the corn market, yes, we got this big supply over us. And if you think about it, you know, we destroyed demand a little bit last year, and it's much, much harder to build it back. But maybe at these price levels, we can. So maybe there's a little bit better future than what we're musing about in corn going forward. But building that demand back up is always more difficult than destroying it.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. You can also buy your farm asset ticket there. It's registration, just $80, coming up on December the 15th. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Matt Bennett from agmarket.net, Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, Ellen Dearden from AgriView, and Philip Shaw from Under the Agridome. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.